Our feet sustain our body weight along with the impact of bounce from walking, which can be as much as 3 to 5 times our body weight. Plus, we walk about 100,000 miles in a lifetime. So it shouldn't surprise us that at times our feet complain from the pounding that we put them through, especially if we carry excess weight or we do a lot of running or jumping. So what does good foot care entail? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Foot issues can involve tendons, bones and skin and can range from pains and sprains to inflammation and infection. However, let's not wait for those problems to start. Instead, let's prevent them, beginning with good footwear. Here's Chris and Robin, who know firsthand the value of good shoes.
We met at the American Red Cross. We were working there and we started running together at lunchtime. And Chris ran cross country in high school.
And track, right.
And I started running as an adult and became passionate about running. We became friends, we got married. And then after many years of working at the Red Cross, we decided we needed to do something that we were more passionate about. The Red Cross is a great place to work. It did really good stuff. But we wanted to get closer to people. Here, we are on the front line helping people. And we were customers of a Fleet Feet in D.C. and knew what they were all about and pursued that.
Well, I would just say we also wanted to be closer to our son. We live in Gaithersburg. The commute was a large commute. Having a store right next to our house, we can also support the store very well because we're right here. And so we could be at the store a lot. I think we were always pretty active. I lifted weights a lot. I think you worked out a lot too. You didn't just run, you biked,
right.
And you do bike now. So we've always been very active, even when we didn't know each other. And then when we got together, it was easy because we had a lot of the similar likes.
I did my first race when I graduated my senior year of college. This was a long time ago. And running wasn't a huge craze back then. So I ran a little bit then. And then when I moved up here, it was just so beautiful to run on the mall and to run on the parkway, the Mount Vernon Parkway. There were just so many beautiful places to run that I just started running casually up here. I remember one time specifically, I was training for Marine Corps Marathon and I was on a 16-mile run and my foot was killing me. And I hobbled back to my car. I took my shoes off, I got right into my car. And I drove directly to Fleet Feet Sports in Adams Morgan, and I just took my shoes off and showed them my feet, and I said, help. And they fit me in good running shoes. My feet were a mess that day. But ever since then, I learned about the importance of shoes.
I knew that all the way back when I was in high school, because we had a really good team. We actually won the state champions, and we all have wanted to make sure that we were going to be healthy. So all the way back in the 1970s, I was making sure that I was in good shoes. So for me, it goes all the way back then.
Those shoes have come a long way since then, which Chris will show us later. Plus, we'll use our running shoes with Sean, put a new twist on a favorite side dish, and learn how to look after our feet from an expert. So let's get started with the news. In the headlines today, who does foot care best? Plant-based for physical fitness and amputation up eightfold. When it comes to diabetic foot care, men are not as good as women at looking after their feet. A study of 1,500 diabetic adults aged over 40 in Brazil found that compared to women, men were more likely to report not drying between their toes after bathing, not regularly checking their feet, walking barefoot, and having poor foot hygiene. They also inappropriately trimmed their toenails. They had poorer compliance to a diabetic diet and didn't attend for blood testing as often as recommended. It probably won't surprise you, though, that women were more likely to wear inappropriate shoes. A plant-based diet enhances physical fitness and type 2 diabetes. Researchers compared a plant-based diet to a conventional diabetes diet in 74 people with type 2 diabetes who engaged in an hour of exercise 3 times a week. Maximal performance and lung capacity were assessed. Both groups had a similar calorie intake, but physical fitness increased more in the group eating a plant-based diet. So if you have diabetes, a plant-based diet could make it easier to reach your peak physical fitness. People living with diabetes in some parts of England are 8 times more likely to suffer an amputation than those living in other regions. For example, the seaside resort of Scarborough in North Yorkshire is the country's hotspot with 4.9 amputations per 1,000 adults with diabetes. On the other hand, Brent in northwest London had the lowest rate at only 0.6 per 1,000. Of concern is that the overall rate of amputations has increased by 16% over the last 3 years. So diabetics, be sure to keep a close eye on your own feet and seek attention for any problems. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Today's guest is Bob Thompson, a certified podologist and executive director of the Institute of Preventive Foot Health. Here he shares his enthusiasm for foot care and why we should look after our feet.
Obviously, feet are very important for mobility, and in fact, they're very important for our general well-being. Throughout our entire life, from birth to death, our feet are in a growing stage, and we need to take care of them so that as we age, we'll be able to keep up with the activities of life, daily living, whether it's at home, at work, or at play.
So how do we go about caring for them? Give us some of our kind of basic rules of engagement with our feet, so
to speak. First of all, I'd like to make sure everyone knows that hygiene is a pretty important part of taking care of your feet. If you can wash your feet every single day in maybe a lukewarm bath of water with a very mild soap, wash them and dry them, making sure that you dry between the toes, especially so that there's no friction that'll create as a result. That's going a long way just initially to take care of your feet.
So that moisture, even the sweat that we get, will increase friction? What's the risk then if we get
that friction?
Well, the
risk of that, of course, there's probably three forces of nature that impact our feet. Impact, pressure, and shear. We're all under pressure. We're sitting here, our feet are on the ground. There's a little bit of pressure. We stand up, gravity takes its toll, and our body weight takes its toll. Impact, as we take a step, the body actually puts 3 to 5 times its weight on a foot every time you take a step. So that's a significant impact. And then shear is the sliding of the foot forward and back, side to side, inside the shoe, which can create great friction against the body, the skin, and create lesions, potentially resulting in ulcers, could be infections later on. And those are bad things for your feet.
Now tell us about toenails. Can we cut our toenails any old how, or is there a particular way we should be doing them?
Mom and Dad told you that you need to cut your toenails straight across, and indeed you do. The reason for that is that the sharp abraded edges of the toenail could end up curving in and creating an ingrown toenail, which again is a very dangerous thing for your foot. Any lesion to the foot is going to be dramatic, especially if you have a systemic disease like diabetes. That could be quite crucial as well. So taking care of those toenails is very, very important, and looking at them is very important. Discolored toenails can give a doctor a good indication about what medical condition you may have. So it's very important.
And thinking about toenails, most women like to go for a pedicure. What do you think of pedicures as a professional?
As a professional, I think that if you enjoy them, more power to you to take them. But I would also offer some very significant concerns. First of all, when you go into a pedicure shop, look around and see if it's clean in the first place. These are breeding grounds for fungus, for bacteria, for infectious things of all sorts. Indeed, if you go put your foot into that water-soaking bath, have they cleaned it? Have they sanitized it? Do they use some sort of a disinfectant? Because who was in there before you? We don't know. It would be even better if they put a little plastic liner in there every time so that, you know, your foot was the only foot that got inside that along the way. Look at the tools that they have. Hopefully they're sterilizing those tools in some sanitation solution. Even better if they have a little autoclave that they're actually de-infecting those along the way. don't let anybody use a sharp instrument on your foot. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how important it is not to allow someone to scrape the bottom of your foot, those calluses, with a blade of some sort. A pumice stone is so much safer for you. Again, any sort of lesion that might be created is a potential breeding ground for infection and fungus.
Eek! I don't want my feet breeding anything. More from Bob in the next segment when I'll meet you in the kitchen, but first this.
Oh, that was a great walk. You know, you should take regular physical activity. It'd be good for your health.
Oh, I don't need to do that. If I get sick or have a health crisis, I'll just go to the hospital. They'll have a great treatment for me, I'm sure.
Have you ever heard of ounce of prevention?
Is worth a pound of cure. Yeah, I've heard that little ditty, but that's not really true.
Does it cost to go for a walk?
Oh, well, a good pair of walking shoes, it costs $120. That's expensive.
And a good heart surgery costs $120,000. That's
expensive. Wow, that much. Well, I'm glad I got that new health care plan. I don't have to worry about that anymore, do I?
But how much time would it take to recover from heart surgery?
Oh, well, I don't know, but walking requires about an hour a day, and think of all the sweat that I'd be doing.
Well, for one, it's only half an hour a day, and you don't have to sweat to get the benefit of exercise. And besides, those are minor details compared to having heart disease and diabetes.
Oh, well, I don't like to think about those things. No. I've got the new Ostrich health care plan.
Ostrich? Is that your new health care provider?
Well, kind of. I just stick my head in the sand and try not to think about it.
Oh, brother. You can't ignore having a heart attack unless, of course, you drop dead like 50% of people do with their first heart attack.
Drop dead? 50%?
50% do. And the other 50% have to go through cardiac rehab. You know, they can't work, they can't lift. Many of them have depression coming out of a heart attack.
Ah, well, don't worry about the depression. I'll just ignore that as well.
Oh, and I guess you think you can ignore the pain of recovering from heart surgery?
Well, yeah, maybe.
Well, and then you wouldn't be able to do very much. I'd have to drive you around.
What? You'd have to drive me the way you drive? No way. Well, did you say just 30 minutes a day of exercise?
30 minutes a day.
Hey, you know, I saw a good pair of walking shoes in here, and they were on sale.
Perfect. An ounce of prevention is worth $100,000. So prevent disease with food and fitness, doctor's orders.
Welcome back. It's time for the kitchen, and Phil has a wonderful new recipe. Phil, what have you got for us?
Today we're making fresh green beans with cranberries.
Yum. They look beautiful. What goes in?
Oh, they are. Well, it's very simple. Today we're going to be cooking with a pound of green beans, 3 teaspoons of olive oil, salt to taste, 2 tablespoons of dried cranberries, and 2 tablespoons of sliced almonds.
Interesting.
Yeah, and this is a recipe that I really like, especially with green beans. I think of it for kind of a nice meal. And a lot of times you put fat and cream and all that stuff in with your green beans. This is a very good, healthy alternative, and it's delicious.
Yeah, I notice you Americans kind of make a bean casserole rather than doing beans like this. So this
Absolutely.
Looks fantastic. So how does it go together?
So it's very simple. What you first want to do is toss the green beans with a little bit of olive oil and some salt, and you're going to bake that at 425 for about 15 minutes. So we've halved our recipe. We've already done that. So you can see this is what the green beans come out and look like.
Okay, and that looks like half of a pound.
Yes.
Yep. This is a half pound.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then it's just very simple because all you do is you are going to take your almonds and your cranberries. I'm going to just toss these around a little bit. And once you've got this mixed up, you put it back in the oven just for about 5 more minutes. And you want it to get kind of a brown look to it.
So it's already been in how long?
This is 15 minutes.
Oh, that's quick then, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a very simple recipe.
Yeah, and then back in for 5 minutes. And, you know, green beans are great. They're really powerhouses of antioxidants and anti-inflammatories. They help prevent type 2 diabetes.
So they're really good food.
They really are. And what most people don't realize is, you know, we think of carrots as having carotenoids, you know, because of the color. These have carotenoids too, and flavonoids. So they're really, really good superfoods.
And this is actually a great recipe because if you've got your fresh green beans, that's terrific, and I love them. But even if it's not the season, you can go for the frozen vegetables, the frozen green beans, and use that in this recipe, and it works really well.
So that makes it even quicker.
Yes.
So you'd probably just whip the tops off and throw them in.
Yep, yeah.
Or as we say in New Zealand, top and tail them.
Which I used to do that, but I've gotten to the point where I just take off the stem, and then the rest I leave.
Yeah, yeah. They would still look even attractive if you left the tops on. I'm looking forward to trying this.
Mmm.
You beat me to it.
I'm quick on this one.
Mmm. Very nice.
Very simple, but terrific flavor.
Really brings out the flavor of the beans. Because when you steam them or boil them, you lose a lot of that flavor into the water. But this is really intense. I love it. Thanks, Bill. Now, if you didn't catch all of those ingredients, you can find the recipe on our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. In the first segment, we learned that Chris had been running since he was a high school athlete and knew about good running shoes. But Robin had learned the hard way while training for the Marine Corps Marathon in D.C. Watch, here's more.
After I got fit for the right shoes, I didn't get the blood blisters on my toes, I didn't get the shin splints, and my knees weren't hurting nearly as badly as they were before. I just didn't know.
We like to hike and walk, too, a lot. And so we do the Avon two-day walk every year. And, you know, it's 26 miles the first day. And I know I would get blisters if I wasn't in the right footwear. We never get any blisters. Our feet feel great. We do see a lot of people out there who are on the side of the road. We can actually tell which one's going to be because we see them pronating in the shoes or the shoes aren't enough. And we see them on the side with bloody feet and blisters, and they're just, they look like they're not enjoying the day. And we actually get through it without any pain at all and without any blisters or anything. We actually get a lot of people who go to a podiatrist. And the podiatrist will send them here to get fit for shoes just to walk around. If you're walking the dog, if you're doing whatever. If you're overpronating, there's a lot of things that can happen to your feet. Most people do overpronate. So they get blisters, they can get bunions, you get plantar fasciitis, heel spurs. All that's caused by overpronation. And the shoe fit, if you get in the right shoes and the right inserts, you can actually slow a lot of that down so that you can take a lot of that pain away.
We still run. We don't run marathons, but we'll go out and run 3 to 4 miles several times a week just to keep fit. I cycle, I rock climb.
We hike.
We hike.
We weightlift. We actually have a little tape called The Beast, and so it's about weightlifting so we can get really big. Hasn't worked yet, but it does keep our muscles from atrophying. Because that's important, too, when you're getting older and we're past middle age, you're around middle age, you know, you need to lift and run, I think. I think you need to do both.
And lifting and running both put strain on the feet in different ways. Pain can be the result. I asked Bob Thompson, certified podorthist, how much of a problem painful feet really are.
I would say, first of all, pain of any sort is not good, not right, and doesn't have to be there. So we need to find out what's causing that pain and try and put some remedy to it. I look at pain in 3 different ways, a 4-foot pain from the metatarsal bones forward, a midfoot pain, which is essentially your arch, and hindfoot pain, which is the heel particularly and Achilles tendons and things like that. In those sections of the foot, there are any number of dilemmas that can befall you. Starting in the forefoot, let's pick a hammer toe. You know, it's something that presses up against the top of your shoe and creates all sorts of lesions, not only on the top of the toe, but on the tip of the toe at the same time. You might have a bunion, where the big toe hits the first metatarsal bone and creates a great angular joint at that point and rubs against the side of the shoe as well. You can get the flip side on the little side, on the bunionette, or Taylor's bunion, at the 5th metatarsal.
So what can you do about those things?
If you could hopefully follow some of the recommendations that we have for taking care of your feet and wearing the right size shoes for your feet, wearing padded socks that will absorb pressure and impact and reduce the shear under your feet, maybe even wear a custom or over-the-counter orthotic device, which is important to correct any anatomical abnormalities of your foot along the way.
So a lot of it is to do with footwear, getting the footwear right.
Absolutely. 80% of our population wears the wrong size foot. You may have already always worn a size 7, 7.5 shoe since you were 15 years old. But if you still are, I just bet you don't have the right size shoe on your foot.
So our feet change as we
feet
age?
Feet grow your entire life to the very single day you die. Little teeny amounts, obviously, not the 3 and 4 spurt sizes of a child, but they do continue to grow. And that's why many people will go into their closet, put a pair of shoes on, and say, that's a little tight right now. Maybe I'll wear them tomorrow. And tomorrow comes and they're still a little tight. The fact is, eventually, you hit the growth part, which now touches the shoe, and you only have one choice. Well, maybe two. Give them away or amputate your foot. But that's not the right solution.
That's a little bit radical. So we covered the forefoot, some of the issues around the forefoot. What about the midfoot?
Midfoot is really basically arch related. If you have a very high arched foot, unfortunately, you weren't even designed to wear a shoe. No shoe manufacturers really takes into consideration your type of foot type. But that arch needs support in order to get the forefoot balance and the hind foot balance approximately 50-50. Without that, it's impossible to have that because the arch has nothing to rest on. A flat-footed person, the very same thing. They need the arch raised up a little bit in order to spread that distribution of weight 50-50 instead of having it somewhat flat along the entire bottom of the foot. Probably the most important diagnosis that a doctor would send to me in clinical practice for a midfoot problem is it's a combination of hindfoot midfoot, but it's plantar fasciitis.
Oh, yes, that is such a problem. And I think it's increasing.
Well, I would say it's been the predominant diagnosis that I saw in my whole clinical practice. Day by day by day, someone would say, I have plantar fasciitis. And indeed, it's debilitating. First thing, you step out of bed in the morning, you put your heel down. Zinging pain will go up to your leg. It'll go forward, radiating forward across the arch of your foot and end up in the metatarsal bone structure where the toes meet the long bones of your foot. And as you walk, you continue to stretch that fascia, and it gets better and better during the course of the day. But if you sit down and have a conversation with someone like we are, it starts all over again because that fascia then retrenches and makes itself smaller. And as it stretches out again, it actually tears from the heel spur on your calcaneus, your heel bone. And that tearing is actually the physical pain that you feel. It radiates forward and can stretch sometimes all the way to the entire metatarsal bone heads. And
sounds very painful.
It is very painful for those who have it.
So what causes it?
Oh my goodness, plantar fasciitis can be caused by any particular torquing of the foot in the wrong way. If you ask me, when do I know it happens? Most of the time you don't know when it's going to happen. You maybe even not even remember when you did it along the way. But the only solution to mitigating it is to take the most assertive orthotic pressure up upon arch support underneath that arch and hold it firmly. Because of the way that the good Lord made us, the fascia will tear against the heel spur, but it does not tear against the metatarsal heads. So that if you hold that fascia against the bony structure of the foot, as you ambulate and that foot stretches out, it doesn't tear from the hind foot, and it never tears from the forefoot, and it gives that reducing the pain structure along the way. You can wear night splints to bed at nighttime to hold your foot in a dorsiflexed position, toes up, heel down, stretching out that fascia as best you can. You can do exercises like standing on a stair and dropping your heels down. That'll do it. Or leaning up against a wall at an angle so that all stretches out the fascia. It will grow back. It will grow back even longer than it was if you can keep it in that position long enough. The dilemma is we all have active lives, so it's very, very hard to get off your feet for a long period of time, and that could be months, in order to let that fascia grow long enough again.
So it's shortened in a moment, but then it has to grow
for a while.
For a while, yeah. Before it can be remedied.
And people tell me it could be 6 months.
Oof, that sounds painful.
Yes.
Yeah. Any inflammation going on at the same time?
I'm sure fasciitis, of course, that's an inflammatory issue. The same as a tendonitis or something like that, or a bursitis. All those are inflamed. So you probably want to take a non-steroidal medication of some variety. I'm not a doctor, so I can't prescribe those things. But, you know, you could tell somebody what they would need to take to help them reduce inflammatories.
And there's a bunch of herbs that could help.
Absolutely.
More from Bob in the next segment. But before we go there, I want to ask you, how long since you washed someone else's dirty feet? In Genesis 18, Abraham offered some travelers who were walking by the chance to rest in his home. And you know, the first thing he offered them was water to wash their feet, and then a meal.
Later, he learned that he was entertaining heavenly visitors, including, it says, the Lord. Wow, imagine washing the Lord's feet. What an honor. But then that story reminds me of the story in John 13, when it was the Lord who did the foot washing at what we call the Last Supper. And we call it that because it was the last time that Jesus ate before he died. The last time he could be with the 12. If only they knew in advance, they wouldn't have squabbled about who would wash everyone's feet. And afterwards, I bet they kicked themselves for not washing their master's feet before he went to the cross. I'll bet they were sad that they were too proud to do it. But you know, they're not alone. Pride is a problem for all of us. And that's why I think Jesus modeled humility in washing their feet. He modeled it to them and to us. Dwight Moody once said, "God sends no one away empty except those who are full of themselves." So how will humility change you today as you empty yourself of self and let God fill you instead? Welcome back. Sean's here and he's brought a chair. This is really exciting. Hi, Sean.
It's just a chair. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to sitting down.
No, we're not going to be sitting down
in
this chair.
Uh-oh.
We sit down all the time. So why not use one of the tools that are at our disposal all the time, right?
Yeah.
So the chair.
Great.
So let's get warmed up first.
Okay.
Okay? So we're going to be doing some upper body, some lower body, and then some upper body again using the chair. If you're in the office, it's here, you have to use it. You're limited for time, use it. We're gonna show you some ways to use it.
Great. Okay?
So the first one, we're just gonna go into squats, set your timer for about 30 seconds. And these are called speed squats. I call them air squats, speed squats, same thing, all right? What you wanna do is get down, pop up. You're intentionally moving fast. You can start off, you keep on going. Now the beauty of squats is that you start off high, and then as you get more limber, you go a little bit lower. Put the weight in your heel. 3, 2, and 1. Do that. Heart rate's up. You feel good. You kind of feel prepared to go into it, right?
Right.
So we have our chair. You're at work. You have about 15, 20 minutes to work out. First exercise, we're going to work the triceps, okay?
All
right. So go right into dips. Nope,
okay.
No sitting, I promise. There are two ways to do this. The first is have your knees bent. Number two is have your legs straight. The only downside of having your legs straight is that you may feel a little bit of tension on your knee. So just semi-bend it just a little bit right there, and then you can go into your dips. All right? Set your timer for about 30 seconds. Go all the way up. Now, the goal here is to not rush. Do not rush the tricep dips. These are great exercises to work those arms, firm it up, keep it nice and tight. You know those hello goodbyes?
Yeah.
Right, get rid of those hello goodbyes. 3, 2, and 1. Perfect. You could have a seat. I call them hello goodbyes because someone says, it always says hello, goodbye.
All at the same time.
All at the same time. All right. So you're going to stand up. No sitting at the job.
All right.
All right. We're going to do a isolated lunge, single leg lunge. We're going to point the toe in the chair. Keep the chest pointed up. All right. Make sure that the chest points forward. Eyes are forward. And all you're going to do is bend. Back up. All the way forward. Chest is forward. Get about 10 to 15 reps. Feel good. Go all the way down. The knee doesn't go in front of your sneaker.
Yep.
And come back up. I'll let you try it.
Woof.
I know it's a challenge.
This looks tough.
It is a tough one. But what is tough will make you stronger sometimes. So take a nice step forward. There you go. Hold my hand for a second. There you go. 3, 2, and 1. Keep it up. Now go. Perfect. If you're having difficulty, you can use a broomstick just to kind of give you some balance. But you're still going to work that quad. Get the other side.
Switch.
Yep.
Okay.
Set that timer for about 45 seconds or 30 seconds on each side. Isolate. If you're having problems with balance, use that broomstick, any little pole, or another chair to give you some balance.
Yeah.
All right, 3, 2, and one good job. So you work your triceps, you've isolated your quads, right?
Right.
Now we're gonna work the chest, okay? So we're gonna hold right here, the sides of the chair, nice and firm, and come all the way down. All right, once you get up to the top, you're squeezing your triceps, but you're working the chest as well, okay?
Right.
So try for about 3 reps. Keep the body nice and firm. 1, make sure you're breathing. There you go, come on, give me one more. All the way down, and push, good job. There you go. So set your timer.
And if that's too hard, you can do it on the top of the chair.
But it's all about the challenge, right?
Yes.
It is nothing better than challenging yourself in order to make a change. If you want to do the same thing over and over again, you're going to get the same results, right? Yep. So challenge yourself here. So you got your dips, you got your isolated lunges, you got your push-up press. Set your timer 15 minutes, all right? Do as much as you can for 30 seconds each exercise and keep on repeating it. Hydrate, keep on going. You got 15 minutes. You may need to take a shower afterwards. You'll be fine. All right, let's stretch it out.
Okay.
Okay, so you've worked the upper body. Let's work these triceps. I'm gonna turn my back and show you a great way to stretch out the triceps right here. Reach for the middle of your back. All right, stretch the tricep by putting your hand right here. Stretch, touch the middle of your back. Stretch it out, okay? That's one exercise to get the triceps. All right, another one to get for the quads is to go into a really deep squat, all right? So right here, take your elbow, put it right in the inside of your thigh and push apart, get a good stretch. In 3, 2, and 1, come nice and slow. Open and close the chest, you worked it. Good way is to open up the chest cavity, contract, open it up. In 3, 2, and 1, and you're done.
Thanks, Sean. You just turned our inactivity into activity.
That's activity.
Yeah.
That's here.
It's great.
Good job.
Which is better for your bones, dairy or soy milk? As we age, our risk of developing osteoporosis increases, and our dietary choices can make a big difference. The Adventist Health Study found women drinking milk at least once a day had bones that were just as strong whether they drank soy milk or dairy milk. Those drinking milk less than once a day had a significantly higher risk of osteoporosis. Maintaining strong bones is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for the questions you've sent in by Facebook, text, and phone. Here's our first one. What are the pros and cons for women to use testosterone for pre-osteoporosis? Well, as far as I'm aware, testosterone doesn't benefit the bones, but it is used for improving libido. However, it raises cholesterol and blood fats. Therefore, it increases the risk of heart disease and strokes. Here's our next question. Sarah asks, we drink freshly juiced vegetables and fruits every day. I heard that combining them makes some fruits beneficial and others not beneficial at all. Is this true? Well, blending fruit and veggies into a smoothie is more beneficial than juicing them because some nutrients are lost with the fiber when it's thrown away, and also the sugar is absorbed more quickly when the fiber is gone. That said, all fruits and veggies are nutritious and beneficial to the body, and if you eat them in the same meal, they get combined in the stomach anyway. However, the less processing there is, the greater the benefit. Here's our next question. Brenda asks, I had rotator cuff surgery. Is there a supplement to improve recovery? Well, Sarah, vitamin C can reduce the risk of infections immediately after the surgery. And then later on, vitamin E is important for healing. And you find vitamin E in nuts, seeds, whole grains. Wheat germ is a really good source. And then green leafy vegetables. Protein is also important, but don't overdo the protein. Just get about 50 grams a day. Now, remember, you can send us your questions these various ways. And let's decide if we want to eat this today. Nearly everyone has heard of the grapefruit diet. It's been around for about 80 years. But the weight loss associated with the 12-day calorie restriction has nothing to do with grapefruit. It's all about starving yourself.
Now, a sensible eating plan is a much better option. But having said that, grapefruit are full of vitamin C and folate. They're rich in pectin, and that pectin acts as a bulking agent which binds to bile acids in the colon and reduces cholesterol. One problem that grapefruit has, though, is that it interacts with many medications. So if you're on any medications, be sure to check with your pharmacist before you eat any. These red grapefruit have more lycopene than the yellow ones, and that lycopene protects the skin from sun damage and reduces the risk of prostate cancer. A quarter of a pound of these lovely grapefruit contain only 40 calories. Bon appetit.
When toddlers begin to walk, parents often become concerned that they appear to have flat feet. I asked today's guest, podorthist Bob Thompson, if this is really something worthy of concern.
I would say, by and large, it's not so much a worry. You know, kids are born with their whole structures ready to grow. And those little padded fat feet are going to walk around for a while. And in terms of learning their balance and things of that nature, they've got to actually have that arch take a formative shape. We don't know when they're born if they're going to have high arches, low arches, or medium arches. So I think it's an evolutionary thing. A pediatrician obviously could stress if it's going to be more of a concern or not, depending upon what the age of the child actually is when this concern presents.
Okay, so they'll sort of grow their foot structure, grow into their arch. Oh, I like that. And so parents don't need to worry, and they can just put whatever shoes they like on them when they're not walking yet.
I think so, but they need to be conscious about good footwear versus bad footwear. And there's lots of bad footwear out there, unfortunately.
Yes, I'll bet there is. Now, tell us about hind foot. We're talking about the heel. What sort of problems? You mentioned heel spurs. So
heel spurs are little bony prominences that will grow on, particularly on the plantar surface, the bottom side of the heel, which can impact because they hit the pressure points under the bottom of your feet. An Achilles tendonitis would be significant, you know, at the back end of the foot where the Achilles tendon attaches to the calcaneus or the heel bone. That can become inflamed as well. There's a little bursa that's a naturally occurring bursa behind that attachment point, and if it gets inflamed, it swells, of course, again, and puts pressure from the tendon against the bone. That can be a problem.
Does that come from footwear?
It can come greatly from footwear, and especially if you have what's called Haglund's deformity, which is, in the vernacular, a pump bump, a little bump on the back of the heel. Many women get it. Many men get it as well, by the way, but it's from the rubbing of a shoe against the calcaneus bone. It's trying to protect itself along the way, but as it does so, that little calcaneus grows some tissue there, and it rubs and it rubs and it rubs, and it's hurtful. So you have to get a very nice padded collar around the ankle so that it would not rub so greatly. And I guess if it's really important, a doctor could perform some surgery on that ultimately if they need to.
Ooh, that sounds painful.
It would be.
Tell us about calluses, because I think most of us develop calluses.
That's a very good thing. Calluses are simply dead skin cells, which every day they slough off our feet every single day. Well, at some point in time, particularly over the bony prominences of the foot, the tips of the toes, the metatarsal bone heads, and the heel. Those fat pads beneath the skin degrade over time. And as they do that, the bony prominences continue to push against the skin, against the shoe, whatever you're wearing. And so the dead skin cells that normally would slough off take on a protective quality, and instead of the fat pads protecting the bony prominences, the calluses do, because the dead skin cells no longer slough off the foot. They will just continue to impact and hold together and form these protective coverings over the bony prominences where the fat pads no longer do that. The dilemma is, of course, as they continue to build up these calluses, at some point, they're just putting a lot of thick dead skin cells against that bony prominence, and it can hurt just as much as it could have without having that protection there at all.
And so what's the solution?
The solution there is to have someone debride that particular callus, again, not with something sharp and blade, but rather something like a pumice stone that will just shave it down, trim it down, and soften it up. And that may have to happen over and over again because there's no longer that protection. Indeed, again, if you use this little sort of solution concept that the Institute has put together with the padded sock component to it, that will actually replace some of the fat pads on the bottom of your foot if the padding of the sock is in the right place. So a combination of those things can really help.
Now, you mentioned a pumice stone. Could we actually wield the pumice stone ourselves if
you
we know where our calluses
Absolutely.
Are?
The only counsel I would suggest is if you can't reach the bottom of your foot for whatever reason, physical malady, obesity, You just can't see the bottom of your foot. Or if there's some sort of a, again, some sort of a systemic disease that might be a concern to you and you can't see the bottom of your foot, ask a partner to do that for you. But certainly if you can turn your foot upside down and look at it and rub the pumice stone against it, absolutely. You can also put a pumice stone in a shower at the bottom of the floor and just rub your foot back and forth over it as well.
Oh, that sounds easy. Now, you mentioned hygiene right at the top of the show, and
yes.
We're talking about pumice stones. How often should we change our pumice stones?
Well, they wear out, you know, just like anything else. I have no really solution to which is the right time to do it. But I would say every 3 or 4 months, if it's worn down to a smooth surface as opposed to a little bit of a grainy surface, it's time to replace it.
So we don't need to worry about infections off of our pumice stone?
I don't think so much as that. It's not such porous material that it would absorb. It will wash off. Certainly you can keep it clean. Wash it with, again, a lukewarm soap and water solution. I think that would be very fine.
And any with calluses, any creams or ointments that we should be using?
Creams that help the foot. Again, I've often recommended to my patients that both the plantar surface, the bottom of the foot, and the dorsal surface, the top of the foot, could use a lotion of some sort if it's a dry skin condition. The other admonition, again, is never between the toes, because that allows the bony prominences of those toes, the phalanges, to rub against each other. Too slippery, and they could create corns between the toes, ulcers ultimately, and again, I'm always concerned about an ulcer leading to an infection.
An infection can be disastrous. More from Bob after the break, so don't go away. And we're back. Chris and Robin are the proud owners of Fleet Feet, a running shoe store in Gaithersburg, Maryland. They help people get into running as well as get them into good shoes.
I think what most people think is, oh, I want to run a 5K. So the first day they go out, they run 3 miles or 5K. Well, you don't want to do that because, you know, you want to gradually get there. So our program will have you actually walk more than run in the beginning. So you're basically like walking 3 minutes, running 1 minute. You do that 4 times, that's 16 minutes. That's the first workout. Most people can do that. So that's the first day in a 10-week program that gets you eventually to run, only run. So eventually as you do it, you're reducing down how much you're walking, you're increasing how much you're running, and eventually you're running the whole thing. And if you do it the right way, because we even say like when you're running, you shouldn't be out of breath. You know, you need to be able to breathe and talk to the person next to you. That's why it's good too to also take a program where there's multiple people. If you do it on your own, it's very difficult. If you do it with other people, they help drag you out, but then you also talk to them. It goes a lot faster, it's a lot easier, but it's also slowing you down so that you can talk while you run, and you're going to be much more successful in that 5K.
Someone who just wants to start to get active, they should go to some specialty running store and let them do an analysis of them and get their gait and their feet analyzed so they get into the right shoe. Most people go to a store, they look on the wall, they pick a shoe that looks like they like it, they try it on, it fits, it feels comfortable in the store. But most consumers don't know the difference between a neutral shoe and a motion control shoe, and that can play a big part in if they actually stay active or not.
Shoes do come in multiple types of stability. So there's like what we call minimal. So those are almost like barefoot shoes, and you've probably heard of that. Then there's neutral shoes, which don't have a lot of stability, but have a lot of cushion. Those people who don't pronate a whole lot, they need cushion, and they don't need as much stability, so that's a great shoe for them. Stability shoes, you need to have that thicker density post on the arch side, because that keeps the shoe from crushing in when you pronate. And motion control are for people who are typically heavier and pronate a lot, and it's basically just a heavy stability shoe. So people won't know that necessarily looking at the wall. Like you see all the shoes on the wall there? They don't know. They might say, oh, I like the pretty blue one, but that pretty blue one might be completely wrong type of shoe for that person. So what we do is we go through and we evaluate through several steps the foot. We take several measurements and we'll help recommend to get them into the right shoe.
The lives that we change are just amazing. It's the best part of the job. When we go, like this weekend, we're going to a race because it's the target race for our fall 5K training program. And we're going to see people cross the finish line for their first 5K ever. And they're going to be crying. And
there's a lot of hugging, a lot of crying.
Yeah, it's very emotional. So that's the best part of this job, is to actually see how we're changing people's lives. And the shoe fit's very important, because if they take our program but they don't have the right shoes, then there's a really good chance they'll get injured and they'll stop.
And getting injured and stopping won't help us live our best life or manage our weight issues. I asked today's guest, Bob Thompson, if being in the midst of an obesity epidemic takes a toll on foot health.
It's significant, and you're right, it is an epidemic. Statistically, 36% of our population has a BMI greater than 30. And that's obese. The above 25 BMI is some other number I don't have at the top of my tongue, but that included means we're in a bad shape, whether that's from eating too much, a sedentary existence, or potentially even a pregnancy, which is not necessarily the obesity, but it is an excess of weight. Those functions will impact, again, those pressures that we put on our feet. And in fact, because we may be overweight, we probably aren't excited to exercise as we would have otherwise. Any repetitive motion issues that when we move our foot or change our foot, can result in stress fractures in the foot. They can flatten out that arch. In the course of a pregnancy, something we see frequently is a posterior tibial tendon dysfunction, where the foot appears to be a flat foot. That's really not so. The tendon fails a little bit, and as a result, that whole arch will fall down. That can be repaired. It can come back again. But all those
with time.
With time.
Yep.
But all those conditions make for a very difficult world for the population that we would like to get to lose a little bit of weight and be a little bit more active.
So right now, these people, you know, are struggling with some of these foot changes.
Yes.
What should they be doing? Should they be changing their shoes? Should they be wearing inserts? What's going to be best?
I think that the wearing of inserts is the only thing in our bodies that the good Lord forgot to give a little bit more extra attention to along the way. And I think even people who have normal arch support can actually do a little bit of an advantage to get that weight distribution back to the front and the back and the hind foot of their foot. So I would think wearing of an insert, whether a commercial version or a custom version, would be very, very helpful to that person. Wearing the right footwear is important because as that foot puts more weight upon it, it'll tend to splay and widen. It'll tend to lengthen a little bit as well, and we want to have the right under support system for that foot at the same time. Many shoes are made small, medium, large widths. The reality is it's really one width. It's just a bit of a stretch of the leather that allows the foot to splay over it. We'd really rather have a sole that goes the entire width of the appropriate width of that particular foot and give it much better support along the way.
Now, you mentioned stress fractures. What causes stress fractures?
That is really a repetitive action activity or quick motions that move one way or another. Stress fracture is one that the bone doesn't separate, obviously. So it's a microfine tearing of the bone. And the more you bang upon that bone over and over again, traditionally occurs in the metatarsal bones, the five long bones of the body. But they also occur in the heel, the talus bone, which connects to it, and the lower shin bones, too, as well. But there's the solution to that is probably, I think the acronym is RICE, rest, ice, compression, and elevation. Stay off that foot, allow that bone to knit back together again, because the repetitive action just keeps it happening over and over and over, and it never heals. So that can be a very dangerous thing. Sports players will get this frequently. You know, they're soccer players, basketball players, even tennis players. They're moving side to side laterally. They go forward and back a lot, and that quick start, quick stop action tends to torque their bones in a way that would not normally happen in regular ambulation.
Thinking of athletes, what do you think about the barefoot running or the barefoot type shoes?
There's a whole lot of controversy about barefoot activity. Me, I am not a proponent of barefoot anything. I don't think you should go barefoot even in your own home. And the reason for that is, if you've ever dropped a glass in your kitchen or something and you cleaned up all those glass shards, you know, eventually, if you're barefooted, you'll find one that you didn't find, and it'll hurt. And if you're a diabetic person, it won't hurt because you may not have feeling in your foot. It's an insensate foot, and that could quickly, again, lead to an infection, ultimately an amputation if it goes significantly without treatment. So I'm a big proponent on the beach. You think, I'll go barefoot on the beach. The beach is very hot, sanded. the sand is very hot. So ultimately, you could burn the bottoms of your feet. Again, if you're a diabetic with an insensate foot, you won't know it. You'll just burn your foot. So it's very, very important. So,
what about the shoes that are not particularly supportive and they have the five toes? They're just really rubber skin.
And actually, they're called five fingers, I think, for some reason, although they're your toes. As a runner, that doesn't give you very much protection. It gives you certainly road feel, if you want to feel the road under your foot. But there are stones and there are pebbles and there are rocks and there are potholes and there are all sorts of things that can destroy your foot. So there's a whole group of people that swear by them. I am not a proponent of anything that doesn't provide protection for the foot.
Now, tell us a little bit more about the Institute and the Institute for Preventive Foot Health.
The Institute is a very unique nonprofit research and education foundation. We were developed to make the world aware of all the problems that feet actually have. 80% of the people in the United States at some time in their adult life have a foot problem. That's like 180 million people will have a foot problem of some sort. So once we make everybody aware of these from minor to major problems of the foot, we've also come up with a solution that can help people to protect their foot and prevent injuries to that foot from occurring, in the hopes that as they age, as they particularly get involved in other activities, they'll be able to do so aggressively, with fun, with enjoyment.
Great. And I found it a great resource after you pointed me to it, ipfh.org.
That's correct.
And so you can even diagnose your own foot problems.
It's a foot pain tool on that. Now, we make sure that you understand that that's not a substitute for seeing a clinician. It's just a tool that says, well, gee, if I have this sort of a symptom, what might it be? There are lots of things that present similar symptoms. And the only real way you're going to find out what's wrong is to visit your foot healthcare specialist, a podiatrist, a foot and ankle orthopedic surgeon, your internist, whomever you see clinically would be the one to go to diagnose a particular problem. But it'll give you some ideas and maybe give you some sort of treatment opportunities if you think you have one of them.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been great having you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Don't take your feet for granted. Look after them every day. Keep them as clean and dry as possible. Keep your toenails trimmed straight, not curved, so you can avoid them becoming ingrown. Since our feet grow throughout our lives, remember to get your foot size checked occasionally so you can be sure you're getting the right size shoe. And if you have pain in your feet, see an expert. And for a load more information about feet, go to the ipfh.org website. It's an invaluable resource. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.